Okay, folks, good morning. Be glad you're not on a cruise ship called the Felicity Ace. Well, it really wasn't a cruise ship. It was a cargo ship full of cars, about 4,000 vehicles, 1,100 of which are Porsches. You may have seen it on the news, floating in the Atlantic on its own with no crew. The vehicles were VWs, Audis, Bentleys, Lamborghinis, and Porsches, 1,100 Porsches. Just the Porsches alone are expected to exceed $140 million. Total lost cargo, they're estimating somewhere around $335 million, and insurance will not cover all of that. One of the things that's making it a lot worse is the fact that, many of the cars on this ship were electric cars. As a matter of fact, they think that's what started the whole thing, is some lithium-ion battery went haywire and caught fire. And apparently lithium fires are pretty fierce things. So if your Bentley was on that ship, then it's going to smell like smoke. No, you're probably not going to get it. They're going to tow it to back to Europe and do some salvage operations and see what they can use on it. I'd say the ship is a total loss as well. So that's very unfortunate. So somebody does have it worse than you, especially if they had a new vehicle ordered from Porsche or Bentley or Audi or any of those others. We got some good news yesterday, though. We got an extra allocation of about 30 Nissans that we were not expecting. You know, sometimes when you are dealing with automakers and you have district representatives and regional representatives, and then you have, you know, the really big shots, sometimes it helps to know them. I had fired off an email to my regional manager, telling him, you know, just kind of, we did build a new facility, and we're the only one in the whole Southeast region that, completed one last year, and we would, you know, love to have some more cars to sell. And so we got them, and I was very pleased with that. That's in addition to our regular allocation. So sometimes the squeaky wheel gets the grease, and so I just greased the skids a little bit and got us some extra products, so I was really happy about that. So a question, is the fact that Russia is now moving into Ukraine, is that going to affect your buying decisions or the way you live your life? I don't think it's going to affect mine, but it could. You know, you never know. The stock market, for example, yesterday fell 482 points. I think it was the fourth straight day of pretty big drops. Ford stock yesterday lost 0.75. GM lost $1.83, it looks like. So, you know, this is going to, you know, it's an emotional thing. It's driven by the news cycle, I believe. And if more people watch the news, then they may let this bug them a little bit. But, you know, I just don't think the average person does. Quite frankly, I would guess less than 10% of the entire population of this country would know where or what Ukraine is. They may think it's some type of a salad dressing for all they know. It's just that, you know, it's not something that's on a lot of people's radar. They just don't watch the news. They're too busy with their lives and other things that are going on. I know some people that take a lot of pride in continually staying informed on what's going on in Washington and maybe state government, maybe to some degree local government. I used to be one of those peoples. To me, it's just mentally disturbing, and I'd rather just concentrate on my fam and buying and selling cars and playing with antiques and stuff like that. I don't want you to think that I don't pay attention, because I do read my news feeds occasionally on my phone. But when I do, I just get upset, so what's the use? Some news, however, we do need to pay attention to. This article that I was reading in Motor Trend magazine about what's been going on our highways in terms of accidents and deaths. More than 20,000 Americans died in road crashes in the first half of 2021. You know, a lot of these statistics are a little slow to get to us. That's an 18.4% increase compared to 2020, and the largest number of fatalities in that time period since 2006. So something is going on. What is it? You know, some of the people out there blame our vehicles. They say that our vehicles aren't safe enough, that we don't have enough safety equipment, headlights aren't good enough, roads aren't good enough. You know, it's always something, and people don't want to put blame on other people when, in fact, that's what it's all about. Driver error is the overwhelming reason for motor vehicle crashes and deaths. NHTSA noted in its analysis that the pandemic lockdowns and work-from-home directives significantly changed driving patterns and behaviors in 2020. Of drivers, now this is a quote, of drivers who remained on the roads, some engaged in riskier behavior, including speeding, failure to wear seat belts, and driving under the influence of alcohol or other drugs, NHTSA reported. Speeding and not using seat belts remained elevated in 2021 compared to pre-pandemic times. Changes in alcohol and other types of drug use were also documented. That's interesting and not surprising. Automobiles, however, didn't fundamentally change between 2020 and 2021. Road systems didn't change either. You know, when you look at driving a modern car, truck, or SUV, most have automatic transmissions, power steering, anti-lock brakes. About all of them have stability control systems. Driving a car just isn't really that difficult. Most of us find it way easier than playing the piano or, you know, juggling, something like that. And that's precisely the problem. These days, we can get where we want to go with astonishing low level of attention. And that's unfortunate, because we are so distracted by cell phones. Too many people die on roads because too many drivers are simply not paying attention to what they're doing. ZenDrive, which is a transportation data analytics firm, said that in nearly 17% of all collisions that it analyzed in 2020, a phone was in use in one of the vehicles 5 seconds before impact. The Federal Highway Administration says more than 50% of the combined total of injury and fatal crashes occur at or near intersections, the majority of which have roadways controlled by at least a traffic signal or a stop sign. In almost 17% of fatal crashes involving large trucks, NHTSA says that those killed were in the vehicles that rear-ended the trucks. So really, folks, no matter how hard automakers work on active and passive crash safety systems, no matter how well our roads are designed for safety, humans, disinterested or distracted or drunk or drugged behind the wheel, are always going to be the weak link in the system, because that's just who we are. That's how we behave. And that's why this automated technology is such a big deal, trying to get the driver out of the way. You know, I love driving. I mean, when my wife and I go someplace, I want to be the one driving. On trips, I'll drive the whole way. Rarely does she ever get behind the wheel unless I'm just really sleepy or something. And but most people would rather not have to drive. I truly believe that. It's an inconvenience. I think people who love cars, you know, like me, they like to drive. And a lot of people who don't love cars could care less. Well, like my wife likes to remind me, PAD, people are different. So let's take our first break. We'll be back here in 60 seconds. Okay, I'm back. You know, I'm really getting excited because the Amelia Island Concours d'Elegance is coming up here in a couple weeks. That's one of my annual brother trips, along with some other friends. You know, we drive down there and we eat good and play hard, and, well, play hard for old geezers. We go to car auctions. I'm looking at the sale list of and pictures of cars that will be sold at the Gooding auction. Been there numerous times. Probably, I don't know, this might be my 12th year of going down there. And I remember one year Jerry Seinfeld was there. I'm standing there eating a chicken croissant sandwich, I think. And I look up with a mouthful, and here comes Jerry Seinfeld walking right past me. And he was selling about 30 of his Porsche collection. Did pretty good. I think the year after that, there was this really tall brunette lady that walked past me, and that was happened to be Caitlyn Jenner. I think used to be Bruce Jenner, you know, the Olympic, was that the 1976 Olympic Games in what, Canada? Montreal, yeah, that's right. But anyway, I'm just looking at some of these cars, most of which I cannot afford. Well, there's a few. But, you know, the ones that I can afford, I really wouldn't want. I mean, everything brings big money. Occasionally, one will slip through. Here's an 88 BMW M3 I might be able to swing if I really like that car. A lot of Porsches. Porsche is really hot right now. I think I've mentioned that. What they do is they present these cars, and they have a lot of information about ownership and the history and where the car comes from, and then they tell you what they anticipate the car is going to bring. So here's a 97 Porsche 993, which was a really phenomenal car, one of the last air-cooled Porsches. This is a 4S, which means that it was all-wheel drive, and the S means that it was a higher performance version. They estimate that it will bring between $150,000 and $200,000, and it is being sold without reserve. Most of these are. You know, back in the early 70s, Ferrari was developing a car called the Dino, which was named after Enzo's son who died. His name was Dino. I don't think that was his full name, but that was his nickname. And so Ferrari came out with a car. It was sold originally as a Fiat. Really, it didn't have any labels on it other than the word Dino. It did not say Ferrari anywhere on it. Probably 10 years ago, you could buy a nice Dino for $150,000, somewhere in that neighborhood. This one is estimated, this is a 1974 model, estimated between $400,000 and $500,000. Here's another little Porsche you may be interested in. 1959 Porsche 718 RSK. Looks like a race car, silver. No roof, very low windshield, obviously specifically used for racing. Estimated sale prices between $2.5 million and $3.5 million. Pretty big range, wouldn't you say? 2005 Porsche Carrera GT. I saw Seinfeld had one of these. It's estimated at 1.8 to 2.4. So you kind of see what I'm talking about. There's some old American cars. I love seeing these old Packards and Lincolns and Cadillacs and stuff sell from the 30s. They are such beautiful cars. And, you know, you just think about how those cars were built and when they were built. I mean, what was going on in 1932? That's correct. The Great Depression. Obviously, some people were not very depressed back then because they could afford these incredible cars that were being built back in the 30s. This 32 Packard probably sold back then in the mid-teens, which when you think about a Model T Ford selling at that same time for about $695, this car is in the mid, you know, like $15,000. This particular car is estimated at $2.4 million. So that's what makes it fun, you know, going to this auction is kind of pretending and watching all these rich people swap toys. And some of the cars are just phenomenal to look at as well. A lot of these restorations are at such a high level that you just don't see anything that at a car show in Johnson City. You know what I'm saying? I'm having a hard time finding anything on this list that I could afford. Well, here's an 88 Mercedes-Benz 560 SL. It's estimated at $70,000. I mean, I guess I could do that. I'd have to sell a couple other cars, but I'm not going. I'm just going to go for the free breakfast and just enjoy watching this. But anyway, if you guys ever watch, like, Speed Channel, or, well, I guess maybe the History Channel. I'm not sure where they show the Mecham auction. But you see the Mecham auction. You see the Barrett Jackson auction down in Scottsdale. And they have them on, you know, at different times of the year. Mecham's biggest auction, I believe, is the Kissimmee auction that they have down in Florida. And then, of course, the granddaddy of them all is the Barrett Jackson in Scottsdale. Someday, I definitely want to go to that and to the Concorde, the Elegance at Pebble Beach. I don't know when I'll get back out to the Bay, well, south of the Bay Area, the Monterey Peninsula, I should say. I've been out there several times and was out there not for the car show, but for a car dealer meeting. That's usually what drew me out to that neck of the woods. There's this little drive around the Monterey Peninsula called the 17-mile drive. That's actually what it's called. And it's a wonderful, the scenery is just beyond belief, and as are the homes. It's really hard to drive and enjoy it because there's so many curves and stuff like that, and it's easy to go off the side of the little two-lane road. But it, if you ever have an opportunity to go to maybe San Francisco or somewhere in that neighborhood, definitely go to Monterey and take the 17-mile drive. And if you have a lot of time, you can do what my wife and I did on our honeymoon, and that's fly out of McGee Tyson Airport in Knoxville. We flew to San Francisco, and we stayed there for a few days, and then we drove all the way down Highway 1 to Los Angeles. And that was an amazing journey. Saw things that I had never dreamed of. The Pacific Ocean, the coastline there is just beyond belief. We saw the Hearst Castle, which is down in a place called San Simeon, California. And I'd never really heard of the Hearst Castle. I mean, it's really hard to beat Biltmore, isn't it? And Biltmore House in Asheville is still probably more imposing and just gorgeous and unbelievable from a house standpoint than the Hearst Castle. But the Hearst Castle has Biltmore beat when it comes to the scenery. I mean, it is just something else. So let's take our last break, and I'll be back here in 60 seconds. Okay, I'm back. You know, occasionally when people are car shopping and they bought a vehicle like, I don't know, 2-3 years ago, and they've been paying on it, and they financed it for a really long term and high interest rate and didn't pay anything down. Matter of fact, they had a negative balance on their trade-in when they traded the last time. And then they go in to try to trade cars, and they're told, well, I'm sorry, we can't get you financed. You know, they'll try to find a nice way to say it, but that's basically what they're trying to tell you, is that there's too much negative equity. You're upside down, and you can't trade. Well, things have changed. You know, if you or somebody you love was told several years ago that they were upside down and couldn't trade, they probably can now, because used car values have gone up so much that that's making it possible. Now, there are no big rebates and deals right now. I mean, pretty much all transactions are occurring at MSRP, and used car values are out of the roof, but the book values are too. And so that kind of equalizes that situation and allows somebody who had negative equity at that time to be able to trade now. You just got to be prepared to lower your sights a little bit. What I mean by that is you might be able to get into a new car, but you might have to back off a little bit on equipment. Maybe you don't get a sunroof. You know, maybe you get a SV model instead of an SL model if it's a higher level. You know, we've been doing that quite a bit lately with folks that, you know, several years ago they went shopping around and they just could not find anybody that could put a deal together for them. So now that's very possible. And so don't be discouraged. Just go shopping. Now, you got to be smart about it. Don't pay more than MSRP. There are plenty of dealers out there that will sell you new cars and not charge over window sticker for them. There are a lot of dealers out there that are adding $3,000, $4,000, $5,000 addendums to cars. You know where they are. You just drive around. You know, just look at the window sticker, and if you see like $10,000 markup on a vehicle, then they're doing it. Now, are there some really scarce vehicles out there like Corvettes and stuff like that they're going to mark up? Yeah, I mean, I paid it on my Corvette. I paid way over sticker for my Corvette, but I wanted it. And now, you know, I could afford it though. I mean, that's a little bit different. I mean, if somebody is having to make monthly payments on a vehicle and it's really tight from month to month, and you know, you really want a new car, you go in, you got to make sure that you're starting from the right starting place and not way over MSRP. Secondly, make sure you understand what the used car value is for the vehicle that you're driving. You know, get some offers. You can go to Carvana if you want to, or CarMax if you want to do it all digitally, or you can just call Gateway and talk to our BDC, and they'll hook you up with one of our managers, probably my nephew or my son-in-law. Or you can send a message to me on my cell phone, and I'll tell you what your car's worth. I don't care whether you're – I'd rather you buy it from me, but I understand. I mean, everybody doesn't want to buy a Nissan or a Ford. Some people want Hondas and Toyotas and so forth, and I get that. Just let me know what you're trading, and I'll tell you approximately where you need to be, and I'll back it up with my money. I mean, I'll buy the car from you. If they won't give you enough for your car, I'll buy it. So, you know, you can protect yourself. And also, don't just stretch your term out there so far in order to get your monthly payment down. I mean, 84 months is too long to finance a car. If you have to finance a car for 84 months, you don't need to be buying a car. You need to stay, you know, 72 months at the most and try to pay some money down. I mean, it really does pay off. And I understand if you don't have any money, then you can't pay any money down. Save it. Just wait. There's no big hurry. You know, prices will probably come down anyway, so it might be worth the wait after all. Well, thanks for listening to this edition of My Car Guru, and we'll be talking to you tomorrow.